Good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. This is the Senate Committee on Workforce. And we have two public hearings, possible work sessions, and then a work session on the attorney fee bill. And we've got strange scheduling issues and fiscals that we're waiting for, but hopefully we'll be able to move and work all of these bills. So what we'll do is we will start with 3248, the QRF bill. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3248A. And Matt, why don't you tell us what this is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3248A requires public agencies terminating contracts with qualified nonprofit agencies for individuals with disabilities, also known as QRFs, to require in a new contract for the same work that the contractor must offer employment to the employees of the terminated QRF at terms as or more favorable than terms under the former contract. It allows contracting agency to require the QRFs to comply with applicable local ordinances governing labor standards and to disqualify from public contracts QRFs repeatedly violating local labor standard ordinances. There are -A5 amendments for this bill that remove the applicability to contracts for services that expire and requires provision of health benefits for those who work 28 or more hours per week. As this came through the House, it was determined to have no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Okay, I'm going to ask Nan Heim and Andres Salinas to please come up.
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm the contract lobbyist for SEIU Local 49. SEIU Local 49 is an 11,000-member healthcare and property services member union combined with SEIU Local 503. SEIU is the largest union in the state, representing over 65,000 public and private sector workers. Of those workers, SEIU represents approximately 400 janitors at PHC, Portland Habilitation Center, a qualified rehabilitation facility in Portland. I'm here today to testify in support of HB 3248A engrossed, which we believe makes important changes and improvements to one of Oregon's key employment programs for workers with disabilities. Specifically, I'd like to focus on the -A5 amendment, which SEIU has agreed to support with the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. Workers with disabilities are impacted and may have a difficult time adjusting to a new work environment when their QRF employer loses a public contract through no fault of the workers. A worker choice retention policy would provide a critical component for protecting workers from poor management contracts. Under a worker choice policy, the new QRF would be required to offer employment to the workers employed under the previous service contract, not products, just services. The new QRF would still be allowed to require workers hired under this provision to undergo its standard hiring procedure and probationary period. Again, the -A5 amendment only applies to terminated contracts, not expired contracts, as it does in the underlying bill. The underlying bill requires this new management team to pay the same wages, but unlike the underlying bill, the -A5 requires the same health benefits be offered to those workers working 28 hours or more per week. And no other benefits would be required as it is in the underlying bill. The employee would have 90 days to make the choice to stay or to move on once the new contract is put into place. Ultimately, this provision is about giving employees with disabilities choice about their place of employment. They get to choose whether or not they want to stay in a job that they may have enjoyed or whether they want to move on. Regarding the agency opt-out, under current statute, public agencies are currently required to first attempt to fulfill public contracts from the state's list of QRFs available if there's an available QRF capable of providing the needed goods and services. Problems arise when the only QRF option may be one that doesn't provide its workers with adequate wages or benefits, or one that has racked up multiple bully complaints. The bill allows the non-QRF contractors to contract with the agencies if the other QRFs are in violation of local labor laws and the non-QRF contractor agrees to keep the existing workforce, and again, if the employee chooses to remain. In closing, we want to thank the Oregon Rehabilitation Association for its work to come to a supportive position on the -A5 amendment. SEIU urges your support for the -A5 amendment and the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Nan, welcome.
Chair Dembro, Vice Chair Thatcher, my name is Nan Heim. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. Our members are nonprofit organizations throughout the state that provide jobs and housing for Oregonians with disabilities. We have about 50 organizations that belong, and a little over half of those have met the requirements to be qualified rehabilitation facilities and participate in the Products of Individuals with Disabilities Law. We did oppose House Bill 3248A in the House, mainly on the grounds that it just added another layer of complication and complexity to the already challenging process of finding employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities. I am here today in strong support of the -5 amendments, which, in the words of one of our members, take the sting out of the bill. We think that the specific mention of wages and health benefits, that's a fair thing to have in there, and we support narrowing the scope of it. I also want to thank you, Senator Dembro, for getting us together, and I want to thank Andrea and Felisa Higgins for their willingness to negotiate on this bill.
Great. Thank you, Nan. Any questions? Yes, Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Nan. What does neutral mean? Does that mean that your members will not be lobbying against the bill? I know there's another bill that we got to neutral on, and your members were then lobbying against the bill in the building and in the media.
Chair Dembro, Senator Gelser. Our organization, we were talking about this earlier, our association has 50 members, but we have thousands of individuals who are involved with our organizations. We have, of course, the individuals who are served. We have the employees, the families of the individuals who are served, and the boards of directors. I would be very, very surprised if there is any dissension on this particular position. Because we really have vetted it pretty thoroughly. I think on the bill to which you allude, that has a spectrum of individuals, and we worked very hard to get to a neutral position. There are members, in fact, we have a former state senator who's on a board of one of our organizations, and he has me on speed dial because he likes to let me know what he thinks of our positions. But I think in this case, a neutral will mean I don't think anybody will dissent. It is very hard to bring thousands of people into one position.
And we did work hard on that. I just think it's very difficult for the credibility of an organization if they make a statement in a committee and then members of the organization make it appear that those statements weren't truthful.
The position of our association on the bill to which you allude is neutral.
Thank you.
Yes, Vice Chair Thatcher.
Excuse me. Thank you. I'm just curious about the provision of health benefits for people working 28 hours or more. Where did that number come from? It's usually been 30. I mean, that's usually been what's been discussed.
It does come from the Affordable Care Act, and my understanding is that 28 is the figure.
Oh, I thought it was 30. That's news to me. Okay, thank you.
It was news to me, too.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak to this bill, House Bill 3248? Okay, seeing none, I think we're ready to open a work session on House Bill 3248.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -A5 amendments dated May 20th, 2015.
Vice Chair Thatcher has moved to adopt the A5 amendments to House Bill 3248, dated May 20th, 2015. Any discussion of the amendments?
Mr. Chair, I certainly support the amendment and appreciate the work that's been done, but just want to emphasize that when people make compromises and they do so that an organization says that they are neutral, that it's very important that people follow through with the commitments that they've made and not appear to go back on those at a later time.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? Is there any objection to our adopting these amendments? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3248A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Thatcher has moved House Bill 3248A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
I'm not to a yes yet on this one. I might be. I do want to have some discussions with some of the parties.
Okay, thank you. Carrie, why don't you call the roll?
Senator Gelser?
Aye.
Senator Knuth?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thatcher?
No.
Chair Demko?
Aye. The motion carries. Actually, the motion passes. Who would like to carry? Anyone?
Okay. I'm glad to carry it.
Okay. Senator Gelser will carry. Close the work session on 3248. You got
it? Yeah, just came through.
Great. Okay, I'm going to open a work session now on House Bill 2764. We are ready to move this bill. Matt, can you remind us about it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2764A modifies the circumstances under which attorney fees may be awarded an amount of attorney fees and workers' compensation claims and requires interest payments on compensable benefits, attorney fees, penalties, and costs. I'm sorry, actually, I'm reading the previous version. Please let me revoke that. Requires interest payments on compensable benefits, attorney fees, penalties, and costs that are withheld pending an appeal, and allows attorney fees under certain circumstances for representation related to or before the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Requires attorney fees awarded to be equitable and aggregate in relation to fees earned by attorneys for insurers and self-insurers, and directs the board to review attorney fees biannually. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There are -A9 amendments for this bill that remove some of the penalties and require attorney fees be proportionate to the benefit of the injured worker if insurer unreasonably delays or refuses to pay attorney fees or costs and raises attorney fee cap from $3,000 to $4,000 in such cases. It also expands the circumstances in which attorney fees are assessed. I'd like to point out that this measure had a fiscal impact that was just adjusted really moments ago and is now up or will very quickly be up on OLIS. But the paperwork has officially come through, and it is ready to move.
Okay, thank you, Matt. John, do you want to come forward? Is there anything you have to tell us about it? And this, you'll remember, was something that was vetted through MLAC. I think, you know, we heard from the MLAC co-chairs as it was being finalized, and now it has been finalized. And as I understand it, the A9s, all the questions about them have been resolved. So, John.
John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And that's correct, Mr. Chair. MLAC met yesterday to provide their recommendation about the A9 amendment, and they agreed unanimously to recommend the A9 amendment version of the bill to the committee.
Great. Okay, any questions of Mr. Schultz? Yes.
I guess I would still like to know what the impact to the system is. Is that what's in the fiscal? I don't know. I'm not clear.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, the impact of the bill will likely be to raise some of the costs for workers' attorneys' fees across the workers' compensation system. There have been some analyses of that, and I would imagine that the fiscal, which the amended fiscal, which I have not yet seen, that the chair just talked about, would discuss what some of the increased costs would be to the state. The analysis that has been done has indicated that there would be cost increase in regard to the overall cost of the system. The cost increase of this bill, I think, would be rather minor. They're certainly intended to be rather minor, and I think if we found out, and we do intend to track the impact of this bill like we do on legislation, if we find out that that's not the case, we and MLAC would be back with further recommendations in a future session, I'm sure.
Okay, so what I heard is there's an impact, but not really sure. Okay, I'm not clear on what it is
yet. He assumes it'll be minor. Relatively minor or minimal. We do have the fiscals, and we'll print them off right now before we vote, just so you can have a look at them.
Is it on?
I think Matt forgot to pay the bill.
My desk upstairs just received 6 orders for printing.
Okay, just for the record, this is posted up on OLIS. What this says is that Department of Administrative Services estimates a 7% increase in attorney fees associated with workers' compensation claims. This translates to approximately $82,800 per biennium. This would be distributed across agencies according to their workers' compensation claims experience. The state accident insurance fund anticipates an increase in costs associated with attorney's fees due to the provisions of this bill. The exact amount is not known, and the number of claims that may be affected is unknown. At this time, the Legislative Fiscal Office believes that the ramifications of this measure are not fully understood by state agencies, and therefore the fiscal impact cannot be determined. If agencies discover that the fiscal impact is greater than anticipated, they may need to return to the Legislative Assembly for additional resources. Okay, that's kind of standard indeterminate language.
Okay, then my question is, this really is just concerning state agency costs and not a cost to the system, kind of two different things. And
impact on private employers.
Exactly, the whole impact, that's what I was trying to get a handle on.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, I truly wish I could give you a hard figure on this, and sometimes we're able to do that. In this particular case, the impact is really dependent on many factors that we know will likely increase the cost to the system, but we don't. It's impossible to determine how much. And turning to an analysis that was done by the National Council on Compensation Insurance, and Oregon is a member state of the National Council on Compensation Insurance. They indicated that there would be an unquantifiable increase in system cost to Oregon. And their reasoning is that the magnitude of such an increase is dependent on the degree to which attorney fee schedules would be increased and the degree to which attorney involvement would increase as a result of higher attorney fees. So there's an effect of increasing the fees themselves. And what this bill primarily does is it provides more opportunities for fees. So the intent is so workers are able to access attorneys in disputes about benefits and disputes about their claims where they're unable to access attorneys now because the attorneys can earn no fees for prevailing in those cases. So it provides fees in areas where they do not earn fees now. It does increase a cap that are on certain fees. The statutory cap is listed today at $3,000, but it's increased by the average weekly wage percentage of increase every year, so there's a COLA built into it. The actual cap is sitting close to $3,500 today. It increases the cap to $4,000 on those fees. And then it also provides for the board to determine the amount of fees and how those fees will be determined. Reasonable attorney fees is what the statute refers to, and it provides the board with rulemaking authority over those fees. It requires the board to look at that on a biennial basis. So there's a behavioral impact that follows on this, as often is the case in workers' compensation. The amount of benefits that are available and the amount of money that's flowing to the system may have an impact on people's behavior. In this case, it may, and it's intended to have an impact on the behavior of attorneys, that they will be more available to injured workers who are trying to litigate on contested cases or where there's disputes where they're unable to access attorneys now. And that is the basic intent of the bill, is to provide workers with more access. There's a cost increase that certainly would go into that. How much that's going to be is partially dependent on how well the bill works in getting attorneys to take these types of cases. And that's the indeterminate part of the bill at this point. The amount of new fees that are available for attorneys in areas, we don't know what the impact on cost is going to be in those areas, because attorneys have not been getting fees in those areas. So there's no data upon which to determine what the increase would likely be in those areas. So there's really a potential behavioral effect that could impact us, and there's new fees upon which, for the most part, attorneys who've been providing services to workers have been working pro bono in that area, and we don't know how much more those attorneys will be involved, and when they prevail, which is in some of the cases, not all of the cases, they would be earning fees. So those are the two potential increases, and I wish I could give you a harder figure. I know that's vague. Right. That's the best we can do at this point.
We did hear during the public hearing that attorney fees are a relatively small part of the cost of the overall system, though.
Right. That's absolutely correct, Mr. Chair. If the impact of this bill is to increase attorney involvement in helping workers access benefits they presumably could be already accessing, but they didn't have access to an attorney, the ultimate amount of benefits that are additionally paid to workers, I would assume, would be benefits they should have been receiving anyways. That would be part of the rate determination if there's a benefit impact. As well as the attorney fees themselves make up a very small percentage of the overall costs, a very, very small percentage of the overall costs in workers' compensation.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so to clarify on what you're saying, that the increases revolve mostly around a cap in some areas at $3,500 and now increasing it $500 plus having a COLA, and then having, I guess, consideration of a proportionate benefit. I'll consider the proportionate benefit to the injured worker when assessing or determining by the ALJ the reasonable attorney fees. Is that correct? And
Mr.
reasonable
Chair,
is just what's not defined really.
Mr. Chair and Senator Thatcher, you're correct. And reasonable is defined by rules by the Workers' Compensation Board, and they have about, if memory serves me right, there's six or seven factors that the ALJs consider when they're coming up with the reasonable fee. And that's a rulemaking process, and both sides have the opportunity to come in and have influence over what those rules ultimately are determined to be. Yeah. So that's a public process, too.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Sure.
I just have one question. You had mentioned certain areas. You were talking about areas where there was not enough representation. Is that geographic areas or areas of law practice? What areas are you referring to?
Okay. Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair and Senator Thatcher. I'm sorry I was unclear about that. No, it really has to do with areas of practice.
Okay.
It's not geographic necessarily. It's areas where there is no fee available if the worker's attorney prevails and the worker gets access to a benefit or has an increase, let's say, in the amount of temporary disability or time loss rate that they're actually being paid. The attorney today doesn't get a fee for that, and they would under this bill.
Any other questions about this? Yes, Senator Rosenbaum.
I had a comment that having served on MLAC myself, I know that both sides are very zealous in representing the interests. I mean, employer representatives are very careful about making sure that if they approve something, it doesn't have a negative impact on employers or insurers. So I'm confident that they did their job. And furthermore, well, a couple of more things just under mm-hmm. comments that I think the system can only work if when there are disputes about eligibility or benefits, that both sides get adequate representation. And I think that there has been a concern of late, or maybe for a while, that that's not always happening because it's not always possible for some injured workers to get representation. And I think for this system to function with the balance and adequacy it's supposed to, we need to ensure that everybody gets the representation that they should be entitled to. So I'm satisfied that this bill is needed.
Okay, great. Any other questions of Mr. Schultz? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Okay, any other discussion of the bill? Okay, is there any objection to... Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. We haven't actually moved it.
Right. Are you calling on me or?
I am calling on you. So.
Okay. Chair Dembro, I move to adopt the -A9 amendments dated May 20th, 2015.
Okay. Senator Rosenbaum has moved to adopt the A9 amendments dated May 20th, 2015. This is to House Bill 2764. Is there any further discussion of the amendments? Is there any objection to the amendments? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Senator?
Chair Dembro, I move House Bill 2764A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2764A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the bill?
I would
yes.
reserve my yes vote for later, perhaps.
Thank you.
I'd rather change from an ODS than the other way. So.
Okay. Carrie, could you call the roll, please?
Senator Delser?
Aye.
Senator
Canell?
No.
Chair Dembro?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Thatcher?
No.
Senator
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. Senator Rosenbaum, would you like to carry?
I'd be happy to.
Yes, thank you. All right, I will close the work session on House Bill 2764, and I will open a public hearing on our final bill, which is House Bill 3303. And it's my pleasure to call up Representative Evans while Matt tells us about this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3303 expands disadvantaged enterprise certifications to service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. It changes the name of the Office for Minority Women and Emerging Small Business within the Oregon Business Development Department to the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity. It changes the name of Advocate for for Minority Women and Emerging Small Business to the Governor's Advisor for Economic and Business Equity. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. I should note that there are Dash A3 amendments currently being analyzed through the Fiscal Office. These are conflict amendments meant to remedy any conflict with Senate Bill 584 and House Bill 2716. There is no revenue impact, and there was a fiscal impact issued.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Representative Evans, welcome to this committee.
Thank you, sir. Chair Dembro, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill. I must confess I'm going to have to pinch it for Representative Gomberg. He's in a bill signing ceremony right now, and I think he's on his way here as soon as he can. But really, the bill is not much more than was explained. It adds disabled veteran-owned businesses to the list of folks for special consideration and procurement. And it changes the name of the office only because it got so many commas that they felt they needed to put it into a simpler term. So it's a very simple bill. I can tell you from personal experience that this will help a number of vets as they try to reintegrate. And the intent really was this program under business development has been very successful in giving an extra chance to groups that have not always had the best luck or, quite frankly, been treated well. And in this particular case, getting disabled vets that in many ways are dealing with both physical and emotional issues, it was seen as a possible way to help. So really appreciate consideration for this bill. I can't really speak to the fancy amendments having to do with the conflict things, but I'll certainly try to answer any question or dance artfully if I don't.
You have a lot of experience in resolving conflicts, don't you, Representative?
I try, yes, sir. usually through peaceful means.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Usually.
any questions of the representative?
No question, but I do have a comment.
Please.
We did have and I'm not remembering the name of the work group that was in the interim, but I think it was something about business procurement practices for local governments, something along that line. Anyhow, that was a topic of discussion. We were talking about having veterans included in that certification. So I know that was something the work group supported.
Mm-hmm. Great. And did the I think the bill did well on the House side. Yeah.
Did it?
I don't know of any organized.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative. We may not have time for your colleague.
Okay. Well, yes. Thank you for the opportunity. If you have any questions later, don't hesitate to give me a call. I'm right across the way. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on this bill. And sorry, we can't work it because of the conflict that's out there. The conflicting amendments have to. There's a fiscal that has to be worked out. So we will carry this over, the work session over until Monday. Okay. With that, I'll close our public hearing on House Bill 3303A. Colleagues, for next week, we have informational hearings on Monday and Wednesday, as well as our final work sessions on. We still have a few bills that are out there. And Monday's informational hearing will be on the subject of training of inmates, you know, kind of following up on what we did last week with Ban the Box and pre-apprenticeship programs for inmates at Coffee Creek. I think we'll be hearing about something about prison industries, I think. And also information about federal programs that are out there to encourage business owners to hire ex-offenders. So that should be very interesting on Monday. And on Wednesday, we will have an informational hearing on prevailing wage. And prevailing wage, of course, very important. But often controversial program in the state. And so it'll be our chance to really find out where it is and how exactly it works. So that then concludes our work for this week. So One other thing, colleagues, I will ask you to start thinking about your ideas for work that we should be doing during the interim, any issues that you think we should be exploring. I hear that sine die is becoming somewhat imminent, and so it's time for us to start thinking about the next phase in our legislative lives.
You were going to ask us to start thinking about our ideas for the committee party.
Can we take a field trip to Bend?
I will entertain all proposals. But with that, we are adjourned.
Can I stay at Chateau Knope? Can I stay at Chateau Knope?